Blog Talk Radio.
And the day it will come, you better learn how to lose someone, 'cause in the end you will find that where there
Welcome to Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in this morning. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, we are on Stitcher. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're on iHeartRadio. We're all over the place. So check us out. Follow. Leave comments. We love it. And if you want to contact me directly, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Well, you just heard Love and Pain by Ryan Shaw from his new album, Imagining Marvin. He is a 3-time Grammy-nominated singer. He's a Broadway performer. His music has been on Fox's So You Think You Can Dance, ABC's Dancing with the Stars, Grey's Anatomy, and Lincoln Heights. Also on films My Blueberry Nights and Bride Wars and Sex in the City soundtrack. He's all over the place. Good morning, Ryan Shaw.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you. He is on
the West Coast.
I'm on the East Coast. So please be gentle with him this morning.
How are you? What's happening?
Oh, I am hanging in there. This is like a circus our country is going through right now. How are you handling, first, let's talk about COVID. What are you doing because you're an artist? Have you been able to perform to a group yet? What are you doing with that?
At this point, nothing. There's been a few things scattered. Like last year, just sort of really dried up. But this year, there's been a couple of things. Social distance, no audience. I've done a couple of things where it's like the whole band, everyone has their own separate plexiglass to be behind and, you know, and just mainly we're just waiting for things to, for some sort of new arena to, you know, develop, you know, a new way of life. 'Cause I don't know if it'll ever kind of go back to what we consider normal, but, for the immediate future, just waiting for, you know, some sort of new way to, you know, to share again in the same space because it's difficult.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of stuff on Instagram, a lot of videos and things. That's where people are going to more videos, doing Zoom calls with families. Are you doing any calls with your families, like on a weekly basis, just to be able to see people's faces? Do you do that type of thing?
Yeah, we've been doing, we've had a sibling, like, you know, WhatsApp chat forever.
Okay.
And so me and my siblings, we chat about, we chat almost every day, and then we have another one that we added our mother into, and that one is a little more PG. So we so we have those chats going. But then, yeah, once this pandemic started, I have a, you know, because now all of my writing sessions have been through Zoom as well, and so I have a, like a, you know, a pro Zoom account, so we can just sign up and talk, like on a, usually it'd be like one Sunday or once every other Sunday we'll get on and just act crazy for like 4 or 5 hours. So,
yeah,
that's been
what a lot of people
are
doing. Do you feel that it is helpful just seeing the faces as opposed to just talking on the phone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Any little bit more, you know, because when you're in someone's presence, you know, there's three things. You get the voice and you see the image, and then you also can feel the presence. And so that's the part about what I miss most about performing live, because although, you know, you think, oh, we're just in the audience and we're just sitting and watching, it's your energy that actually helps to carry the show. And so that's the beautiful part. And you can hear me sing in my house all day and I can emote all this energy and, you know, sing and scream my face off. And you might say, oh, my God, that's great, and you clap. But it's a whole different experience when you're in the room with me and I take the energy you're giving me and give it back to you, that mm-hmm. can't be duplicated. And it's always
no.
unique, and it's because it's always unique with every show. So even if it's the same music done the exact same way, it's the energy, and that's what makes live theater and live music so, like, life-changing, really, for many people.
Now, you were brought up in the church. Did you ever think about being a gospel singer?
Well, that's what I thought I had to be, if we're gonna be honest. I grew up, like, pretty strict Pentecostal. And so it was all about no secular music in the house. And, you know, I used to have this vision when I was a kid. I used to have it all the time up until about maybe 10 years ago after I signed to Columbia. But I used to have this vision of me singing on stage, and there'd be I couldn't see the end of the audience, and there'd be people that'd be waving their, you know, candles or phones or whatever it was at the time. And, you know, it would just change, and people would be dancing, a range of emotions. But the one thing never happened. I never heard what I was singing. I just saw myself there. And I think that was God's way of letting me know that that didn't matter. And once I headlined the Montreal Jazz Fest for the second time, I realized that that was the moment, that was the vision that I kept having since I was a child, because I didn't know that I was headlining the show, actually, because it was at that stage in your career where you have, like, one gig at Stephen Talkhouse in Long Island for, like, $500 to get gas, to get to the Samsung, the Samsung. Yeah, and you need to do that gig to get enough gas in the bus to get to the Samsung Super Bowl party, in which you may make, you know, $30,000, $40,000 for 45 minutes. And then the next night you're at just a regular gig where you may make, you know, so it was like the guarantees were all over the place. So it was during that time. So the first year I played the Montreal Jazz Fest, I was in a tent. The second year I came back, it was this. I didn't know we were headlining. We were late. And so we got there because of traffic. And so we got there, and it's like, you don't have time for a sound check. You just got to go. And so they pushed the band out behind this curtain. And I'm thinking I'm in the tent again. And they push me out, and they go, go. And I walk out, and then 40,000 people just, like, lose their mind. And I'm, like, in shock. And then I'm like, okay, I turn around to the band. And my drummer, Keith, looks at me. He goes, oh, my God, it's happening. And I go, yeah, it's happening. And so I take a deep breath, and I turn around, and we start the show, and killed. It was a great show. And then I got back to the hotel, and then I realized that that was actually the vision that I had all my life up until, you know, until that point, and that I was where I was supposed to be.
You know, it's so amazing.
If I had heard the sound as a child, I would have rebuked it. Oh, I bind you, devil. This is the devil's work. You know, it would have been all that.
Wow. Crazy. I want to play one of your songs. It's called Get Home. This is also from the Imagining Marvin album.
Yeah.
Tenderly across the many miles that are in between. Where you are is where I want to be. Home. And yes, it's so sweet. You're never early, and you're never too late. It may be crowded, but they'll always find you a space.
Ryan, I have to tell you, that last little section of that clip, I have to play that like 20 times. That, like, in a place. Like, no, let me not try to sing because, you know, I'll mess it up. But I just
no,
like
go
off, something
go off,
hit
go
me. No. Something hit me. Like, I heard the first part, you know, I'm missing home, this and that. And I played the different, you know, and I was like, friend, I would sing. And I was like, I could just play that last 10 seconds over and over and over again. How do you know when you have a hit? How do you know that you hit that sweet spot in a song?
You feel it. It's always a feeling. It's always a feeling. Like I remember, and I actually wrote that song many years ago with Connor Reeves and Jonathan Shorten in London. And I remember I had just lost my grandmother and my younger brother within like the last 5 years of writing that song. And I just remember we were there, and I was also in London, so I wasn't home. And I was like, oh, man, I've been over here for a while, and I'm sort of like missing home. So we just started writing, and then, you know, we hit that.
In the place where I know I've been home. He did it. He did it.
Till
exactly.
I get
oh
home.
My God.
And everybody in the room immediately just smiled, and we were like, oh, that's it. And then so we started in on the verses and just built it. But you automatically know, because it lands in a genuine place. You automatically it will automatically evoke an emotion out of you, either a smile or a dance or a tear. Something will be evoked, and that you know. And those, when you find a sentiment that resonates with most people or with everyone or with almost everyone, then you know it'll resonate with everyone. So that's how I know.
Yeah. What's your earliest memory of home? When you were a kid, how far back can you remember? 3 years old, 4 years old? How far back?
I don't know. I have parts. It's a weird thing. I have parts, and I talk about this with my therapist. I have parts of my memory that are like blocks that are missing, and it's sort of weird. And it's like even like important things that happen in people's life that they say, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you were there," and I'm like, "Was I there?" And I'm like, "Have I been abducted or something? I don't know." But I don't know how much time we got to go deeper into that, but yeah, there are blocks missing.
I'm gonna have to charge you for that, Ryan. Ryan, I'm a licensed social worker, but I would have to charge you if you want to get deeper, okay? But
exactly. But my youngest memories of home are really, it's always have been Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a huge thing for my family. And just my youngest memories of being my Aunt Janice's house. She had a really sort of quaint, sort of tiny house in Stone Mountain, Georgia. I'm from Georgia, born and raised. Being there with all my cousins, and I just remember, you know, being like probably the most fondest memories of being like, you know, 8, 9 years old, and me and my cousins would go back to the back during Thanksgiving, and we'd write a song every year and come out and perform it for the family, and then we'd do improv. My whole family's very, like, into the arts and music and stuff, and so we would do stuff like that, and then we would go into, like, literally, like, 2 hours of improv, of just being ridiculous and doing the most.
Oh, my God.
So
wow.
Those are my earliest memories of home, yeah.
Now, were you afraid? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and my grandmother's sweet potato pie.
Ooh, now, there's a difference between pumpkin and sweet potato, right? You know, right? Like pumpkin?
Oh, yeah, huge difference. I don't prefer pumpkin at all. I don't really. No, I'm not a big pumpkin pie person, but sweet potato? That's where it is. I used to ask my grandmother to make me sweet potato pies just for my. She said, "What do you want for your birthday?" Because my birthday is on Christmas Day, and I'd be like, "I want sweet potato pies." So every year she would make me 5 sweet potato pies, and she's like, "You can share them with your siblings if you want to." And I would usually share one with them, and then I would eat the other 4.
Wait, you said the other 4?
Yeah, she would make 5 of them.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you feel duped out of your birthday? Because like everybody, were you getting double presents, or did you just got one set of presents on Christmas?
Well, I got over because I got double presents. But the thing is, my family doesn't really do birthdays. Like for birthdays growing up, were never really like a special thing. You just got to tell my mom what you wanted to eat, and she would make that. And my mom was an amazing baker. She's the one who taught me how to bake. And so she was a baker, and you would tell her which cake you wanted to make. And she had her specialty cakes were a plum cake, a red velvet, a carrot cake, or a lemon pound. And so you tell her which of her specialty cakes you want. And she used to make a German chocolate back in the day, but she said it's too many steps, so she stopped doing it. But you can choose your cake,
goodness.
And then that was it. And that's what your birthday was. And so most of the time we wanted fast food. We wanted Burger King or something that we never usually got. And that was it. And that, so birthdays were never like, oh, we're going to have a surprise party and this and that and the other. And so, but for Christmas, since they were already shopping, they would go, oh, this is for your birthday and this is for Christmas. And then my siblings would go, well, I didn't get nothing for my birthday. And they're like, oh, hush, we was already shopping. So I actually got over being the Christmas baby.
Oh, you spoiled.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. All right. Let's play a little bit of Strong Men Can. This is from Brian Shaw's Imagining Marvin album.
When was the last time you wanted to let go?
co-wrote that with Valerie Simpson. Tell us about the experience of working with her, because she worked on a lot of Marvin Gaye's songs and Tammy Terrell's songs. Tell us about that experience.
Oh, it was awesome. I've known Valerie for many, many years, like shortly after I moved to New York about 22 years ago. And I used to go sing at the Sugar Bar. And I remember the first time I sang, she came to me and she was like, well, what are you doing with that voice? And I was like, I'm trying to make it. And so she and Nick at the time just took me under their wing. And I used to call them my industry parents. And so when me and my manager, Elizabeth Healy, first started, you know, visualizing this concept, I said, I should call Valerie, because we know she wrote most of Marvin's earliest hits with Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And so I reached out to her and I was like, I got a concept that we've been working on. I had done a demo of I Want You, and it wasn't the exact version that's on the record, but it was a version that I felt was my own as well. And so I took it to her and I said, I want to play you something. Tell me what you think. If you think it's weird or far-fetched, we'll let the idea go, but I want to get your opinion on it. So I played it for her. And she paused, and she said, there's something there. And I said, okay, so that meant, knowing Valerie, that meant that she liked it, and it was good. So later on, a couple of days later, I messaged her. I was like, well, if it's an Imagining Marvin record, you wrote most of his early hits. Would you be interested in writing an original song for the project with me? And she was like, let me think about it. And then so 2 days later, she sent me like a clip of just her at the piano with a note saying, you know, I don't usually send people just my raw, you know, phone audio. I usually take it in the studio and doctor it up a little bit, but I think you'll get it. And it was just her with that beautiful melody and that strong man can't break down. And I immediately, same like I told you earlier, big smile on my face, and I called her and I was like, that's it, beautiful. She was like, okay, well, let's get to work and let's write some more verses and, you know, come over to the house. And then, you know, a week later, we had Strong Man Can, and it was so timely. The subject matter, because it sort of talks about mental health. And, you know, at this time in the country, you know, in the last, you know, 5-10 years, there's been school shootings, mall shootings, and all kinds of craziness happening.
And I sort of hearken it back to
people not being able to express themselves. You know, they've taken music out of schools. And so you have those, you know, those creative thinkers don't have an outlet. And so they become disruptive, not any fault of their own, because you're forcing a creative mind to only do math and science and have no outlet for creativity.
Fit in the box.
And that's
like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's like bottling up a bunch of energy. And we all know creative energy is the thing that changed the world. It's ingenuity. It's music. It's art. It's everything. So when you bottle that up, yeah, it becomes explosive. So, you know, but on top of that, people are also told in this society, especially men, you have to be this, you have to be strong, don't cry, don't be weak, and all this kind of stuff. And
don't
it's
cry.
Sort of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and especially don't cry, because it's BS. When you were born, the first thing you do is what? Cry. That's
cry.
The first thing you do coming into this world. So that's the most natural thing that we do as humans, is release some kind of emotion, whether that cry at birth is of joy, of finally being here and taking your first breath, or whether it's pain of, you know, of coming through the trauma of going through the womb, whatever it is for each individual, that's the first thing you do regardless. And so now to be told later, don't do the first thing that you've ever known, you know, it's just crazy. And so people go crazy. They
Well,
snap.
You know, men are taught to, like, I went to a class that it was related to social work, and they were talking about, it was run by a male, and was talking about the development of men and their emotional, you know, stages and things like that. And one of the things that was so interesting is, like, guys who play football or any sports, say they're in the locker room, they're all naked, but they can only talk about certain things. They can only talk about some rough, you know, beating somebody up or fighting or something, or, you know, what about that sports game? There's no intimate conversation going on, because you're already intimate being naked and trying to take a shower and all these things. But it also happens in other spaces with men. They cannot open up, because then they're considered weak, or they're what they call a pussy, you know, all these things. And some men, it's really difficult to live up to that expectation. And then others, they take it to the far extreme, which is also just as bad, you know, like extreme machismo, you know. So it's important in the arts. I grew up with the arts in my family and then also in my schooling. And even if you don't become an artist, it is expanding and like dynamic in your like emotional development. It's like a catalyst, I feel, to taking you to another level. Even if you become an engineer, engineering is art, you know, in a different way, you know. So, but I love that
song. All creative. Anytime I feel anytime you take something that wasn't and then the next thing it is, that's art.
Mm-hmm.
That's the creative force. It's something that comes through us, because a minute ago there was no strongman can, and now 10 minutes later, or an hour later, or 2 days later, there is something in this playing that we can all experience that was not here before. That's art. There was no build. There was no skyscraper here before. There was no design for this a building for this apartment, but now there is. That's something special, you know. The only thing that's exact and always constant is math. But other than that,
but
most
there
other sciences,
is
everything
art
else
in
is
that
cool.
too. There's art in that too, because then things are discovered through math, you know, and they're always trying to stretch these formulas and things. So it's all around us. Creativity is all around us. But I think having the music or dance, writing, these things, it's a different part of your brain that is working and can help. I mean, think about artists. Look at you. You've been on, you know, the stage, musical theater, but you're also a singer, well, I would say like straight singer, you know, but then there are people who become visual painters. You know, they want to learn how to play a different instrument, like the drums or the piano. A lot of artists are multiple things, but they're all interconnected. Do you feel that is so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, my friends always make fun of me. They're like, you know, some people are like a jack of all trades and a master of, you know, of few, master of none,
yeah.
I mean.
Of few.
He's like, but they say you're a jack of all trades and a master of a few. Because I do a lot, I do, I mean, anything creative I attach to, from food to music to making clothes. Like, I do a bunch of random things. Like, I knit, I crochet, I actually sew for real, like, can make, like,
what?
Dresses and suits. And, yeah.
Get
and
I,
the and,
heck
yeah.
out of here. See?
Yeah, I mean,
that.
I do anything
oh, wait,
that's
okay.
creative.
But we got to talk about,
what do we got to talk about? You need a gown
the vegan
or something?
Cream cheese.
You need a gown or something?
The
what
vegan
are we talking
cream.
About?
No, I need some vegan cream cheese, people. This is the baking king of Georgia.
That's in the
okay.
works.
Tell us
that's
about
in the
how
works.
It started.
That came... Well, right now the project is called Harlem Dream Cheese, because I'm on the East Coast. You said it earlier. I was on the West Coast. I'm in Harlem actually.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
Anyway.
I thought it was early for you in the West Coast. Okay.
No, it's still early for me, but it's not the West Coast.
Oh my
but right
god!
Now,
oh my god!
It's called Harlem Dream Cheese. And it was sort of birthed out of necessity. So as most human beings, after the age of 5, we should not have any dairy. And over time, I became lactose intolerant, and it just makes me feel bloated for like 2 days, and it's just and gassy. It's just not good. And so I sort of went away from cheese a few years ago, from dairy, period. So now I use oat milk, and I find a lot of great vegan cheese options, you know, especially at like Whole Foods or, you know, these world markets. And so, but I'm an amazing baker. Like, I make probably the best cakes you ever had. And my mom taught me to bake when I was younger. And that's a pretty funny story about that. But when I was in London on the West End, I was making my cakes and selling them at the local cafes. But I couldn't eat them because of the icing had, you know, cream cheese in it. It's a buttercream icing that you make for like red velvet cakes, carrot cakes. It's the best icing, but it's made with cream cheese and butter. And I could no longer have my own cakes, which I love because they're the best. And so I went to Whole Foods and I bought every brand of like cream cheese, vegan cream cheese you can find. And none of them are geared for like to be in an icing, because cream cheese actually is a distinct flavor, but it's pretty neutral. It's easy to make cream cheese savory or sweet. But with all the vegan cream cheeses that are out now, even the plain ones, everything is geared towards being savory. And so you can't use it in icing. The icings taste like crap. And so I was like, well, I need to know what's happening. And so I went online and I looked up a few different recipes, and then my mind just started to click about certain things, about what flavor could recreate. So I actually went to the store and I bought a pack of Philadelphia cream cheese, which in America, everyone knows that is what cream cheese is. And then I said, I'm going to go the vegan route and I'm going to create something that is as neutral and as close to Philadelphia as I possibly can, so that I can make my icings. And as of last Sunday, I did that, and I made an icing out of it, and I almost started crying. And so right now it's in the preliminary works, so be on the lookout for Harlem Dream Cheese. It is a vegan product, and it is as versatile as any cream cheese. It works in icings. It's great on bagels. You can make it sweet. You can make it savory. And I'm really, really, really excited about getting this product up. So now I'm in the process of, you know, getting my food handler's certificate and my insurance and my certificate of authority from the state of New York to sell food products. And hopefully in the next month or so that's done. And, you know, I'm starting local here. I've already reached out to many, like, cafes and, you know, the little upscale cafes in Harlem and, you know, around town, and bagel places to, you know, get ready to deliver samples.
Start to
and
sell it. Yeah.
So I'm ready to go, yeah, and get moving. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. And that also came because COVID. And I don't know when I'm going to be able to sing again. And I was like, I always thought I was going to make millions and millions of dollars off of music. And it might be both millions of dollars off music and cream cheese. Look at God.
Ah! Look at this. Let me play a little bit of Choosin'. This is also from Imagining Marvin album. Hold on.
See, I decided the other night I was no longer gonna fuss and fight, because I knew for me to be free that I had to make a change. Yes, so I said to myself, I told my heart, yeah, you got to rearrange. See, I was choosing to get up and seize the day, choosing to live another way. I was choosing my life to be what I thought it should be.
Let me ask you, what's your writing process? Where do you write? What inspires you? Who do you write with or not with? Like, I can't be around you now because I got to be creative. Tell us about this process of writing. You know, like, look, I cannot be talking to you because you're really going to bring my mood down right now.
Yeah. Put your phone on mute. But my process has been varied. It's been wide, because I started, I've always been a singer, but from 2001, the week after September 11th happened, I actually went on my first writing trip to Europe. I had a manager at the time that was just, he only managed writers and producers. And so for a period of time, I was just a writer in my earlier stages. This was before Columbia and everything. So I was just songwriting. And I always knew I would get back to artistry, but I was going to Copenhagen for 5 days, Stockholm for a week and a half, then I'd go to London for 2 to 3 weeks, then I'd come back home for 2 months, and I'd do that all over again.
Wow,
for about 3 years.
All over. Okay.
Yeah. And so when you're traveling and writing like that, and it's literally my first trip out of the country, I was gone for 21 days and wrote 32 songs.
Whoa!
And that was crazy. Yeah, and so it was just churning out stuff, song after song, every day. And sometimes you get into a studio, you know, because now we used to be in the days of, back in the day, was songwriting. And songwriting was, you go into a room, there is nothing. People pick up an instrument, and somebody says, oh, I have this melody that I have, and then you just sort of work it all out sort of organically. That still happens a lot. But now in the day of in the era of the producer, you may go into a studio and this guy just have 400 beats that he just has on his computer, and they are what they are. You have to listen through them and see what you connect with. And then you go, oh, I like that one. And then you have to fit whatever you're thinking into this thing that's already created. It's not my preferred way, but I had to become adaptable to be able to do that, because that's what the industry was doing. And so it just ranges. When I'm writing by myself, I'll just sit at home and I'll pick up, get on the piano and plunk out some things. This is my year to get better with my instruments, but I'll plunk out some things on the piano usually, or I'll have a melody and I'll just come into the studio and just build up something around it to get my idea across. And then sometimes I still have producers now that will send me tracks, or I have these beats that I've been working on. And so it varies for me. Sometimes if I'm hearing a beat or something may come, the lyric may come first. Sometimes the melody comes first. Usually the melody comes first. I mean, I'm full of melodies. Sometimes I have issues with, if any would be with lyrics. I'm more of a melody guy than a lyric guy. Although my lyrics, you know, when they come great. But yeah, so that if I have a struggle, it'll be more so with melodies. But I write in all always. It just depends. I'm open to anything like creative. I've thought it for a while.
How do you deal with blocks? How do you handle blocks? Like nothing's coming out. Do you go take a walk around the block literally? Or, I mean, do you call somebody? Do you listen to something else? How do you deal with having a block?
I stop classifying it as a block because I think creativity, as we were talking earlier, it's a flow of something that wasn't here that here. And so if something is not ready to be here, I don't consider it a block. I just feel that it's not ready to be here. And so I walk away. You know, and it may come to me later, or I'll just do something else, you know, because there's something else creative. And a lot of times when if I'm not feeling creative in writing, I'll go and I'll bake something, or I'll make some clothes, or I'll do something else creative, or I'll paint. I'll do something else creative because creativity is all around us. And I feel like maybe certain parts of our creative channels need to be amplified in order for the others to be, you know, so maybe there's a slight block, I guess, in that sense, but not a block as in I can't, but in a block as in I need to increase my energies that from the other side. And I always say from the other side because I feel creativity is spiritual. It's a spiritual thing regardless, because it doesn't exist on this plane until it does. So we get it from somewhere.
Let me ask, who's your favorite songwriter? Do you have a favorite songwriter?
I would probably say Ashford Simpson.
You have to say that, right? Your parents.
No, not even have to, just because it's true. It's crazy. Well, I mean, when you go back and you think about, you know, the fabric of, you know, black music, which people, you say, they were always going to say Motown. Everybody's going to say Motown probably from jump, black, white, or any other. Like, the music that really changed the face. That was the first music that sort of integrated race in this country. It was a lot of things happened. It's the music that really changed the face of America. And the two of the greatest writers of that time were Ashford and Simpson. So when you still hear, you know, their the catalog today, I mean, they're probably two of the most licensed and synced artists of all time. You know what I mean? It's crazy and sampled. You know, from Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, I'm Every Woman, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and you know, and then to their own music, Solid as Rock. You know, it just goes on and on, and you're like, wow. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. We probably don't even know.
It's funny because even when I was doing this record, I was going on a road trip, and I had pulled up, you know, on my Spotify all of Marvin Gaye's albums. And did research, and I was listening through everything from old to new, you know, obscure and whatnot, because I wanted to make sure that I covered all aspects of Marvin, not just stuff that everyone knew him by, but some things that he just really felt that he connected with, which is also why I did Shadow of Your Smile. But that said, I have found this song that I did with Shoshana Bean on the record Good Lovin' Ain't Easy to Come By. And when I first heard it, I was like, damn, this song is good. I don't know why this wasn't a hit. And so I put it down on my list. And then when I got home, I Googled it, and it was still Ashford and Simpson. I was like, okay, I should have known. I should have known. So it's that. So I would have to say they are Ashford and Simpson. And then my era that I grew up in, you know, 80s, 90s, baby, I would probably have to say Diane Warren after that.
Okay. Now, do you see yourself singing? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Because if you Google Diane Warren and see what she's written in all genres, like, she is a force of nature. Everything from, every time I close my eyes, I miss you, baby, and I don't want to miss a thing, to Toni Braxton, you know, How Could an Angel Break My Heart? I think she wrote that one, too. So she's a beast. She's a beast.
It looks like she's won a lot of awards too, you know, for best songwriting, Grammy Award, Golden Globe Award, all the types of things. So, you better look her up, people, if you don't know who she is. Yeah. So, let me ask you this. What is your favorite song on the, on this album, Imagining Marvin?
I must say it's Shadow of Your Smile. That's a song that I feel really connected me with Marvin, besides the fact that at places throughout my whole career, this album made the most sense to me because I didn't really want to do any kind of covers album, and I don't consider this a covers album. I consider it a tribute album, which is why it was very important for me to put original music on it, which is also a big task when you put new original music up next to classic Marvin music. So,
classic,
so it was
sort
of risky. Mm-hmm. It was a risky venture, but I feel that, you know, it was pulled off. So with the I forgot what I was talking about now.
No, we were talking about your favorite song. That's okay. Your favorite song, you said, The Shadow.
Yeah, so in doing Motown, the musical, and talking with Berry Gordy, he would, like, tell us stories about Marvin and how Marvin was always pushing the gamut, always wanted to do something different, even stuff that had nothing to do with music. But at one point, Marvin really wanted to be a crooner. He wanted to, like, be with the Rat Pack, with Sammy and Bold Blue Eyes and all that stuff. And he never really got to do it because BG was like, no, that you can't do, not on Motown, because you're a pop star and this, that, and the other. But before he passed, he did an album called Vulnerable that they called Vulnerable after he passed. It was released after he passed, but he recorded like these American songbook songs. And if you have never heard Marvin Gaye's Vulnerable album, do yourself a favor. If you're any kind of Marvin fan, download that album, and you really see him take the American songbook, and he Marvinized it, because he's always going to be him. And when you see how brilliant it is and how he interprets these songs, and The Shadow of Your Smile is the only song on the record that Marvin actually recorded that I actually did not change. It's the song that I feel connected
us. It's very clear.
The most.
It's very clear and clean song. When I'm going to play it when we finish the show, and you can hear it, people, how it's just crystal clear. That's what I would say, like a crystal clear piece of glass. It's smooth. No.
Well, thank you.
Honest,
but all the other Marvin songs on the record, I added something to, or I changed it, because I needed to make sure that these songs fit me as comfortably as they did Marvin, because I didn't want it to be a covers album. I wanted it to be a tribute album. I wanted you to be able to hear the record, clearly hear my artistry, and clearly hear Marvin. And it was really cool because I did my first live stream show after the album was released at the Sugar Bar. I took over the Sugar Bar open mic and did like an album release because of the times.
Okay.
And Jan Gay came on, Marvin's ex-wife. She came on, and she actually was like, I think it's brilliant. I think the title, Imagining Marvin, was brilliant. I think the way I clearly see you and I clearly see Marvin, and I think, you know, and the estate doesn't really give their blessing on a lot of things. And so to get Jan's blessing on it was really took the weight off of me as well, and let me know that what I set out to do was actually what I was supposed to be doing. And but that song,
I
didn't
hear that
it
in the album.
I hear that in the album.
You know, it's you, because I was listening myself. You know, and I was listening to your earlier records to see like your progression, and then listening like you were doing to Marvin's original, and then listening to yours. And there are these little spots where you can see, okay, that's Ryan. And then you have your songs that you've written, like, you know, Sin, as opposed to He Had Sexual Healing and things like that. And you blended it well. It doesn't seem a discord with your songs and then his songs, like, you know, it's just like, okay, it's flowing into each other, so to speak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be giving away some copies of your album.
Awesome.
To the audience. Yes. What do you see for yourself next? You got the Vegan Cream Tea, but in terms of music, do you have a plan for another album coming out in 2021? You know, what type of music?
I mean, this particular record here is a joint venture with Broadway Records. And, you know, for anyone listening who doesn't win a copy, if you want to actually get a physical copy, please go to BroadwayRecords.com and you can pick up one. With this COVID thing, it's we're not quite sure. We're still literally like now. It feels like we're surfing, and so the waves keep coming in, and we're just trying to stay on the surfboard and navigate to figure out, one, how to continue to get the word out when, you know, in times where I'm not working, and two, how to perform. I mean, the whole point in doing a record, especially one like this, is to be able to go out and share it. So when you're kind of your own label, it's Form Records, the joint venture, my label is Form Records, and Broadway Records is the partner label. So we may have to continue just to build this album throughout 2021 and maybe do either 2022. We just don't know at this point. I mean, I have plenty of music, and we already have, like, what the next record is, what I'm looking for to do as the next record, which is still another soul rock record, which is what I do, but less themed on a particular artist, but just more me doing what I do. But it's difficult. It's difficult to know, you know, because we definitely, I feel this record is so strong that it needs its fair chance to build. And I think in this in these times, I feel like it's just going to take a little bit longer to work it. And so that's what we're doing. We're just going to still try to build this and get the word out to as many people so that this record actually gets what it deserves. If we were in a regular world and I could just travel, everyone would already be knowing, because I'd be everywhere traveling and singing. You know,
you'd be everywhere.
And winning people over. But in these times, we might have to, like, wait, you know, to even start really, like, you know, touring this record until the end of this year. So I don't want to put out another record yet to usurp that. But it may be recorded by the end of the year, but when we release it, we just have to wait and see how it fits in the plan.
All right, some quick questions. We're going to end the interview with some quick questions. Where's your favorite place to visit?
Favorite place to visit? Oh, wow. Well, for if I was going, like, vacation,
vacation,
it would be
baby,
London.
Relax, chill out.
Well, it just depends on what I want to do. I love London. I was going to move there and stay there when I was there. But London is one of those places, and Hawaii. I've been onto the Big Island a couple of times, and it's really, really beautiful. But just a quick getaway, upstate New York is beautiful. I mean, I'm down here, and sometimes we just get away and just go up to, like, New Paltz and just beautiful places, just quaint little towns where you can just, you know, sit with the local people and sit by a river and just do nothing for a while.
Yeah. How about, who would you want to sing with that you haven't sung with?
Who do I want to sing with that I haven't sang with? Wow. I would have to go with greats that are still alive, Stevie and Gladys, because, you know, that would be ideal for me.
What's your favorite cake to bake?
My favorite cake? I don't have one particular, but in my baking, there I have flavors that I developed that weren't a part of my mom's trilogy. When I was in London, I ended up, like I say, making my own flavor. So there's a cake. There's lemon gods. There's red velvet. There's carrot cake. There's cappuccino cake and green tea.
What? Green tea? All right, last question. Who's your favorite clothes designer?
Favorite clothes designer. I'm not super into clothes like that, although I make them. So probably me, and then after me, I would say,
okay.
I would probably
Look, that's
say,
a valid answer.
I'll probably say Armani. I like Armani a lot.
Okay. Well, Ryan Shaw, we like you. We like your music. I encourage people to go out and buy Imagining Marvin. Like you said, as an artist, he's not been able to go out and be with the audience. I will be giving away some copies, but not to everybody. So, again, please go out and purchase some of his albums or download some of his albums. He has several albums, not just this one, that you could choose from, and they all have great songs on them. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on today.
No, thank you for having me. This has been fun.
All right. Well, you keep on baking. I'm looking forward. I'll keep an eye out for the cream cheese. And, you know, when you make another album, I would love to have you back on.
Absolutely. Definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
You take it easy. Have a great
weekend. I'll send you a care package of Harlem Dream Cheese.
Oh my God. That would be awesome. Yeah. Tell Elizabeth. Yes, definitely. I would love it.
Yeah. I would.
All right. All right. Take it easy. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with Grammy-nominated star singer Ryan Shaw. Please check out his album, Imagining Marvin. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You want to follow on social media so you can win a copy of his album. But if you don't win, please support artists because they are really having a tough time because they can't go out and be in front of, you know, the people, and it's really, you know, putting a pinch in their pocket. So please support artists right now. I'm going to end with Shadow of Your Smile by Ryan Shaw. He's singing the song Shadow of Your Smile.
Darling,